The following AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book. AA's Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Hi, I'm Sky. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, first of all, to Rob for asking me to speak tonight. I feel much more nervous speaking here than I have in a long time. I got sober in this meeting, and I haven't been here. I know the last time I spoke here was on my fifth anniversary, so that was 9 years ago, and I think I've been here once since. But I came to this meeting regularly for probably the first 3 years I was sober. I didn't miss a Thursday. Like, I arranged my work schedule, so I didn't work on Thursdays. I bartended, and I always had that as a day I didn't work. And I would answer phones at Intergroup for like 3 hours before this, and I would come here. I'm gonna, I guess, start just by telling you guys my story. I got sober when I was 17. I've been sober 14 years now, and it's kind of rad, like, speaking here, because usually when I speak in meetings, I feel like the need to follow that up really quickly with something else, but I don't here. I grew up in like a totally alcoholic family. My parents are both like artists. They were also just both like total fuck ups when I was young, and my dad was like a totally active mess pretty much, and until I was 12 or 13 and he got sober. My mom was a total Al-Anon kind of mess, and also like a serious pothead, and like kind of just general, I don't think she's one of us, but she was just kind of like a space case. And she went into Al-Anon when I was like kind of 10 or 11, and she started to get a little saner then. But what that meant for me was that like my childhood was really I don't know, my childhood felt really scary. Like, when I think now about what it felt like to be a kid, for me, is that like nothing felt very secure. Like, everything felt very unsettled, and that kind of fear was like the dominant feeling for me until I started drinking when I was like 12, I was very shy. I was very, I was afraid of everything, and knowing that my father was an alcoholic, I mean, it's not just my dad, my entire father's side of the family, every single person is an alcoholic, except if they're dead from drinking. So, that entire side of my family has this disease, and, much of my mother's side as well. My uncle, my mom's little brother, got sober when he was 20 and has been sober like 30 years now. And, so it's like, I knew that this was, I knew this was like rampant on both sides. And my mom like sent me to Alateen once she started going to meetings. And once my dad got sober, I had to like go to like family therapy and, talk about like what alcoholism was and how it affected me and all this kind of stuff. But, so when I started, when I was 12 or whatever, like didn't start drinking. I was kind of scared of drinking, you know. I really had this, like, I didn't want to be like my dad, you know. And so when I started smoking pot first. And, you know, that very quickly led to drinking. I'm just going to move this back so I can sit. You know, I remember the first time that I got high, like, I really remember feeling a part of, you know. I was, like, in my best friend's backyard with her older brother and, like, all of his friends, and he was, like, you know, this guy I'd, like, had a crush on since we were, like, 7 or something, and all of a sudden I was, like, you know, smoking a joint with them, and I could kind of talk to them, and I felt like I belonged, and I didn't feel self-conscious, and I didn't feel that sort of permeating fear that I'd pretty much felt all the time until then. And, you know, once I started drinking and doing drugs, like, my disease advanced really quickly. I mean, the time between when I started smoking pot, like, seriously, and when I dropped out of high school was 2.5 years, you know. And by the time I was 15, like, the end of 10th grade, I grew up here. I went to private schools. I went to a school, like, where it was definitely not acceptable to just not come to school, you know, but I just didn't go to school. And, you know, I mean, I remember, like, the last probably 5 or 6 months I was in high school, I would literally, like, come into school in the middle of the day from being out, like, at a rave the night before, like, still wearing, like, some, like, sparkly dress and makeup, and sleep on the couch in the student lounge until, like, a teacher would be like, you need to go to class or you need to leave, you know. And then I would, like, I remember locking myself in the bathroom and, like, sleeping in there, you know. And so when I was kicked out at the end of, like, end of 10th grade, I mean, I think my mom didn't, like, really know what to do with me, and she was, like, a single parent, and I was just incredibly driven, you know. And it's, like, something that's carried over into my, like, as I've, you know, gotten sober and sort of learned how to be, like, a competent human being, I've learned how to, like, channel that into positive things. But with my drinking and my using, like, I channeled it into that, you know. And my goal was to get high and to stay high, and that was what I did, you know, to the exclusion of everything else. And you know, like, at the beginning of 10th grade, like, so when I was, like, 14, 15, I'd started, like, running away from home, and I would just, you know, I'd, like, go and, like, stay at a friend's house for a couple, like, a week, and, you know, call my mom and tell her where I was. But, like, after I got kicked out of school, I started doing it kind of seriously, and I was, like, going up to New Hampshire. A friend of mine had these friends there who were, like, a little bit older, and they all, like, sold drugs at raves, and I would, like, run away for, like, stretches at a time and just kind of do that and, like, sleep on people's couches and sleep on, like, floors and, like, weird, like, apartments that people I didn't know who were even older had, and just get high, you know. And towards the end of that year, I guess, I started doing heroin, and that was very lucky for me because I think it brought me to my bottom a lot faster than drinking would have. You know, I have no doubt if I had grown up somewhere where alcohol was the only thing that was available, I would have drank myself into this program, or, you know, dead. But, I grew up here, and as a kid here, like, when I was growing up, you could still, like, buy 40s, like, you know, at the corner store. I think now it must suck. It must be harder to do that. But but for me, what was really readily available being in New York was drugs, you know, so that was what I did. And, you know, I think I know a lot of people who got sober young where that's part of their story, too, because I just think as a kid you can get drugs and you can't always get alcohol. You know, that really brought me to a bottom. I mean, the last year I was out there, I was you know, I was out there with, like, this guy, and our lives were just, you know, kind of very repetitive. They were just, like, waking up to go to, you know, kind of find money to get high, to come back, to go to sleep. You know, it just, like, it was not it wasn't, like, a lot of the sort of fun that I thought that I'd been having before that, you know. It definitely didn't, it wasn't that brought me in, you know. Like, what ended up happening is he ended up getting sent away to rehab by his family, and because I kind of didn't know what to do, I went to rehab too, you know, and I went to this rehab. I sort of listened, like I went to some of my, like I went to some meetings there, and you know, but like I didn't really get it, you know, and I got kicked out of that rehab like after a couple weeks. I came back to New York. They had told me to go to meetings, so I was like sure I wasn't an alcoholic, so I called NA, like I wouldn't call AA, and NA's phone lines were down, so then I called AA, and I got this guy on the phone, and I just like, you know, cried to him about like, you know, how I'd gotten kicked out of rehab, and I had nowhere, you know, I didn't know what to do, and you know, and he sent me to Perry Street, and you know, and I went there and I like sat in the back row and I was about to leave afterwards, you know, like I was the last person who shared. I didn't know what to say. I just said like, I got kicked out of rehab. I'm at that point I was 16, you know, and I'm kind of, you know, I have whatever it was, 14 days sober. And this guy came out of the back of the room, like right as I was about to leave. And he looked like someone who I might have known, you know, and that was so key to me at that moment. You know, he had like tattoos and like, I don't know, like shaved head and piercings and stuff. And he was like a little bit older than me. And he was like, you know, had been sober some enormous amount of time. I think he had been sober like a year and a half. And, you know, and he gave me his number and he took my number and he called me the next morning to make sure I was coming back. And the next day he introduced me to some women who were there and some other like young sober people. And, you know, I think, you know, and he's also still sober today, and he was at my 10th anniversary. I eventually moved to Paris, and he also weirdly moved there, and now he has a family there and stuff. And, you know, that phone call for me, like, was so incredibly significant, you know, and I try really hard to remember that in my, you know, in my sobriety, how much it meant to me to have someone call me and to see if I was coming back, you know, because I don't know if I would have come back to AA if he hadn't called me that day, you know. And so I started coming to meetings that summer, and a lot of what I think I was coming for at that point was the fellowship, you know? Like, I met these other, like, interesting young sober people. I met a girl who was kind of my age. She had a couple days more than me. We started hanging out. Like, you know, I met, like, just these young sober people, and they seemed like they were having fun. They were kind of crazy and, like, doing stuff and staying out and, like, running around, and it was appealing. But I wasn't really getting like the whole staying sober thing, you know, like I sort of felt like I should be. So I was like counting my days, but I was leaving meetings to get high and like coming in the next day and just continuing to count my days. And, you know, like I had a commitment mopping up after a meeting on Sunday nights. I would literally like mop up the meeting and then like leave to go to my dope spot. And, you know, the thing that happened for me during that time, and I did that for about 6 months. For a while, it was fine, you know, but after a couple of months, I started sort of wanting to actually be counting my days, and then I stopped. I wanted to actually not be getting high, and then I wasn't able to do that. You know, like I would sit in a meeting, and I would just like sit there on my hands, and I would think the whole time about wanting to get high. And I would think, you know, I'm not going to, I'm just going to sit in this meeting, I'm just going to do this. And I would leave and I would like get on the train and I would get to this spot where I could like stay on the train and go home or get off the train to transfer and go to like my spot. And I would just watch the door, and at the last second I would jump off and I would like run through the door. You know, I absolutely had no, you know, I had no power over it, you know, and it was definitely the first time for me that I had wanted to. Up until then, like, I was absolutely, completely out of control. There was no question about that. Like, I have no doubt if I had stayed out there that my life would have gotten much, much worse, but I didn't care, you know, and coming here and seeing you guys and, you know, something in it seeped into me and I started to really care and I started to really want this, you know, and, you know, the last day that I was out there was no different than any other day, you know, and I think that's really important for me too, because what that tells me is that it wasn't something that I did that changed me, you know, it was something outside of me, you know. I had this moment where I was sitting on a stoop on the Lower East Side and I sort of had a choice, you know, and I could sort of go home and do something different, or I could go back and keep getting high. And I don't know, something in me just sort of broke, you know, and I just went home, you know, and I didn't go, and the next day I went to rehab again. And in that rehab, you know, that thing, that little door of willingness that had opened, I mean, that's how I've come to identify that moment, you know, and they talk about it in the literature. It's like, you know, that the space you have to walk through is wider than you think, you know, but it's like you don't need to be like this, have this massive willingness. For me, like, I all of a sudden I had this little crack of willingness and I was able to, like, push myself through that space, or something pushed me through it, you know, and what that willingness, you know, what that gave me was the willingness to listen, you know, mostly, which I definitely hadn't had before. And when I came back from the rehab, I did everything that I was told to do. You know, I went to a meeting every single day. I sat in the front row. I raised my hand. I got a sponsor. I listened to her. I worked the steps, you know. And what happened for me, and I think this is true for a lot of people getting sober young, is my life started to change exponentially very quickly. You know, like immediately, like, you know, in rehab I got my GED, and then within 6 months I was like applying, like I took my SATs and I started taking classes at Hunter, and I got a job waiting tables at a restaurant, and then I got a job bartending, and then I like got an apartment, and then I got like a credit card with my own name on it. And like... And I had all these things, you know, like all of a sudden, like within, you know, and my first year of sobriety was really like that, you know, and this meeting also was something, you know, that came out of my first year of sobriety. I was at midnight one night, and I think I was less than 6 months sober, and I met this guy who was also about 6 months sober, who was like from Uptown AA, and he was also 17, and we were like, oh my God, this is crazy. We've been sober for 6 months and we've never met. There should be a meeting for really young people. And, you know, he and I started this meeting, and that, you know, this meeting was massively important to my early sobriety, and just, you know, like having a community of like young people, having a community of other young people was just like so amazing, and like being able to be part of that, and you know, all this kind of good stuff happened, you know. And the thing is now, like when I look at that time, like a lot of what I think is like, if I could ever like know that much again, it would be amazing. Because I was like, I think of myself now as having been like super sober in that time. You know, like I was sure of every single thing I was doing, you know, and I was following the book, and I was like, you know, and this is what the steps say, and this is what the traditions say, and this is what, you know, this is what the Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And, you know, what ended up happening for me, you know, was a series of events that led to me being very humbled, you know, and it was the best thing that could have happened to me, you know. My sponsor, who I just like completely idolized, drank, you know, and like spectacularly. Like she ran off with her husband's sponsee. They took off across the country in a car. She got pregnant. Like it was like crazy. They were back at meetings counting days. Like it was terrifying, you know. And I was like 2 years sober, and I had thought that she was sort of AA, and all of a sudden she was like counting days, and it was insane. And yeah. And you know, and all of a sudden, like, I didn't feel so sure about all these things that I'd been taught, you know, and you know, I broke up with some guy I'd been with, and, you know, just all these things sort of happened, and I started moving away from AA a little, you know, and then I moved in with this guy who was an active alcoholic, and then I moved away from AA a little more, you know, and very quickly, as all these, like, external things had come to me, very quickly they fell away, you know. It's like all of a sudden I wasn't going to school anymore, and I just kind of didn't give a shit, and then I got fired from my job, and then I didn't have an apartment, and you know, I ended up in this place at like 3 years sober where I had a bottle of vodka in my bedroom that I had stolen from work, that I was like, when I drink, this is what I'm gonna drink, you know. And I don't know why I didn't drink, you know, and that for me was definitely the beginning of my willingness to consider that there was something bigger than me, that was, you know, that was that had a hand in that, you know, because before that I was also, you know, I up until that point I think I was very like, you know, these are the practical things and this is how I stay sober, but, you know, that spiritual part of the program, that's not for me, you know. And I remember saying that to a friend who also came to this meeting regularly, and, you know, he was sober a few years more than me, and I said something about that, the spiritual part of the program. And he was like, you know, I really hate to break it to you, but there's not a spiritual part of this program. This is a spiritual program, you know. And the point of all those steps is to lead you to an experience with a higher power. And, you know, it's so funny. Like, sometimes you don't know how important something someone says to you is, but that has really... you know, that's been the basis of my 11 years of sobriety since coming back to AA at that time, you know. And I heard someone else say at a meeting like a couple years ago, and this was like really rad for me because this was a guy like in pretty early sobriety, like within his first year. And he said, you know, I've had a lot of relapses in this program, but I've been lucky enough that I haven't had to drink during any of them, you know. And I mean, it's so rad for me, like, first of all, to get that. That's something else that I've, like, really internalized, because that's been my experience with AA, too. Like, you know, I have not done everything as perfectly as I did during my first 2 years, you know. But, but I haven't drank. And since that period of not going to meetings, I've always kept going to meetings, you know. And everything else has come and gone, you know. I've almost always had a sponsor. I had a really hard time finding a sponsor again and trusting them after that, and I think that that's something that I still carry. It's like, you know, I've moved around a bunch of times in sobriety, and it's taken me, each like place that I've gone to, it's taken me a while to like build that relationship again, I think because I was just so crushed by, you know, my sponsor drinking. But, you know, I've pretty much always had a sponsor. I've always pretty much done some kind of service, but I've always gone to meetings. And, you know, and what I've found, like, you know, is, you know, as I've stayed sober longer, like, you know, it's gone like that. It's like, you know, recently I've been going to a lot more meetings than I have in years, you know. And I wish, and I'm trying to go to even more because it feels good, you know. My sobriety, I'm like, I have 5 more minutes. My sobriety has been amazing. I mean, it's been my life since I was 17, so it's like a lot to fill in, you know. But this program has allowed me to do things that I never imagined, you know. It's like, I think the thing for me about getting sober young is it isn't like a question of, you know, getting this life back. It's getting this life, you know, and it's getting a life that I never had, and I never really imagined myself to be capable of, you know. But it's like the incredible gift for me of getting sober so young is I've gotten to do a lot of things, not just sort of repair this wreckage, but like learn to be a human being and be able to take advantage of that. And, you know, after that time, like when I came back to AA, I moved out to LA. I was there for like a year and a half. I took classes there. I went to school. I moved back to New York. I moved to Paris. I was there for 5 years. You know, I always thought, my parents are both artists, and I was kind of like really, I was really put off by that in a certain way, you know. And so when I started seriously going to school and studying stuff, I thought I was going to be a lawyer. I thought I was going to be something like really kind of straightforward. And, you know, and when I moved to Paris, I started doing this internship with this photo agency, and I'd always kind of taken pictures, which is, you know, on the side. And I ended up, you know, this program gave me the courage to sort of pursue that. You know, I mean, I think that my fear would have had me go to law school, if that makes sense, you know. And instead, I had transferred from school in LA to school here, and instead I stayed in Paris. I deferred, and I stayed in Paris, and I ended up never going back. And, you know, and when I came back here, like, what I do is I take pictures for a living, you know. And I just think the ability to... for me, the ability to like sort of look at those kind of fears like in the face and walk through them is something that like I can't imagine ever having without this program. You know, like I look at the people around me, I look at particularly at my family because they're like the clearest reflection of sort of, you know, where I could be. You know, and I look at a you know, just how I've learned how to not be like that, you know, and it's been completely from the people in these rooms, you know, and you know, the other thing I guess I would say enormously, that's enormously affected me, you know, is just like the very beginnings of that relationship with a higher power that started with coming back to AA, you know, but just that's been one of the hardest paths that I've walked in this program. You know, I am still not someone who prays every day. I'm still not someone who meditates every day, but I've learned how to keep trying those things, you know? And so it's like I don't have to feel this immense faith, but I'm willing to continually try the things that you guys tell me work for you, you know? And where that's taken me, like on the path, is from here to here, you know? But like I have, by coming to these rooms, like I understand also that like I don't have to be at the finish line, you know? It's like that's where I am, you know? And I think I was probably like 12 years sober, and like I spent 2 or 3 months like praying every day, and it was the first time in my entire sobriety I had done that, and it really was working, and so I stopped, you know. but I think like that, you know, even just that there is another massive thing for me in AA, like the willingness to kind of like say where I'm not perfect, you know, and to understand that it's kind of part of this. That's another huge gift of this program. So I don't know. I guess that's about all I have to say. But I'm so grateful to be here at this meeting tonight, and it was such a huge part of my sobriety, and it's really rad to see you all here. So thank you for my sobriety.
The preceding AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book.